Hello and welcome to the debate. I'm Nairsi Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. 19 days and more than 1,000 people killed and almost 6,000 wounded. These are the latest statistics out of Gaza. As a 12-hour ceasefire has taken effect, the extent of the devastation can be seen. And in the Al-Shajaya neighborhood, our Press TV correspondent described the area as if a nuclear bomb had gone off, like in Hiroshima or Nagasaki, Japan. How many Palestinians have to die until they can regain their freedom, not only in Gaza, but in all of occupied Palestine?
A fragile calm falls on the Gaza Strip after 19 days of relentless Israeli aerial, naval, and ground attacks against the tiny coastal region. Palestinians who've been trapped in their homes over the past 3 weeks or displaced to other areas in the besieged territory took the opportunity to bury their dead, stock up on supplies, or return to inspect their houses.
Thank God for this ceasefire. We are living in the schools and we came out to shop for food. We came to walk and get fresh air because since the war started, we've been stuck inside the school. No one cares about us. We went and checked our homes.
But what Gazans have faced is nothing but massive and widespread destruction of streets, houses, schools, mosques, and hospitals.
If an earthquake or a nuclear bomb had hit Shajaria, it would not cause as much damage as this. There is destruction everywhere. Tons of explosives. Look and see, nothing remains. No houses, no people. There is nothing.
What did we do to deserve this? We care for 30 orphans. We are the Behjet Kefarna family. All Arab leaders should watch what's going on here. It's like a film.
The temporary lull gave medical workers time to recover bodies from the rubble across the strip. Saturday's calm came nearly a week after efforts to impose a ceasefire on Hamas failed. The resistance group said it would not bow down to pressure unless the 7-year blockade of Gaza that's been imposed by Israel and Egypt is lifted. On the political front, the US and its Western and regional allies have gathered in Paris to discuss a ceasefire in Gaza. But it's not clear whether their gathering will bear any fruit, as Tel Aviv has already rejected the U.S. proposal for a week-long ceasefire, claiming that it won't accept anything but demilitarization of the Gaza Strip. Israel's Minister of Military Affairs says Tel Aviv might soon expand its ground offensive significantly.
What we are expecting in the coming few days, yeah, there will be more killings for the Palestinians. More homes will be demolished by the American-made warplanes. The Americans now are trying to hold, to have a ceasefire and to mediate a long-term ceasefire. These Americans have been supplying the Israelis with all of these toys.
Israel began its third war on Gaza in 5 years after it accused Hamas of kidnapping and killing 3 Israeli teenage settlers, a claim that it never substantiated. Besides, Hamas has denied the Israeli accusation. Israel's stated goal of the offensive is to destroy Hamas military capabilities, the same goal that Tel Aviv was pursuing in its 2 past wars. It seems this goal is far from realization, and Gaza's resistance movements might come out of the current conflict even stronger.
I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Out of Washington, Senior Fellow Hudson Institute, Mr. Richard Weitz. And out of Gaza, International Solidarity Movement, Mr. Joe Catron. Thank you so much for being with us, both of you. Well, let's start this off in Washington with Mr. Weitz. The devastation in Gaza goes beyond any words which can be used to describe it. How is this allowed to take place or to happen in 2014?
Let's break that into 2 parts. That's a good question. The current war, why it's not ending right now, is that it looks like both the Israelis and the Hamas leadership see some advantages in continuing the fighting a bit longer. The Israeli military is hoping to eliminate more of the tunnels that Hamas is using to infiltrate fighters into Israel, and the Hamas leadership is hoping to gain some concessions, relaxation of the blockade, and so on. The more broader question of why we have these wars in 2014 in Ukraine and Syria.
My question specifically, sir, that's a bit beyond us. Mr. Weitz, my question was not why we have wars in 2014. It's why it's allowed to have this type of devastation in 2014.
Well, I wouldn't take the Gaza case. I take probably the Syria case, where it appears over 100,000 people have died. So that's the one we might be a bit of a mystery why it hasn't stopped.
Okay, well, let me turn to Gaza. Your take on that same question, Mr. Joe Cantron. The devastation that we saw today with the video coming in from our correspondent in Shajia, the Gaza area that was devastated, it was beyond, really beyond words. How is this allowed to happen time and time again, and even now in 2014?
Well, I think Israel has faced complete impunity for very similar crimes in the past. What we're seeing its military forces do now in areas like Kuza and Shajaya is very reminiscent of previous ethnic cleansing campaigns like the Nakba of 1948 and the Nakba of 1967. I spent extensive time in Shajaya both prior to the Israeli onslaught there when I was staying at Al Wafa Hospital as part of an international presence, and I've returned to it since now that it's been reduced to rubble. It seems clear to me that Israel is attempting to make these regions along the eastern area of the Gaza Strip uninhabitable for years to come. And this is something that it did with complete impunity in 1948, turning thriving villages and lands it now claims in 1948 occupied Palestine into barren deserts, which it then turned into forests. And these villages are now under forests often owned by the Jewish National Fund. So it's nothing new that we're seeing here. The designs may be a little different this time. There's been a bit of speculation about how far from these lands that its ground forces have reoccupied Israel tends to withdraw. I would not care to speculate on that, but it does seem clear that they're at least trying to make it impractical for any human presence to exist there for some time.
Well, Mr. Weitz, in this world where it seems sometimes that it's the law of the jungle that rules, we see throughout the world now condemnations coming in from the regular people taking to the streets of what is happening in Gaza against the regime in Tel Aviv. However, that doesn't seem to have an effect on the governments that are supposed to represent these people. How many Palestinians do you think have to die before these governments take heed of at least what their own people are demanding, and that is to stop the blind support for the regime in Tel Aviv?
We have to be a bit cautious. This isn't like 1973 or 67, where Russia, Soviet Union and the United States could get together and agree on a ceasefire agreement and then tell Egypt and Israel and Syria, no, stop fighting, we've reached an agreement. The ability to influence these governments is significantly weaker. And so I think that Netanyahu will be more influenced by internal dynamics in Israel, at least in the short term, than any pressure the external governments will put on them. And perhaps the same is true with Hamas, so I'm a little less certain about how the leadership dynamics are playing out there.
Okay, well, going back to Gaza, Mr. Cantron, when we look at the situation that is taking place now, it appears in the past, if we look at, we start with the PLO or the PA, and whenever there was basic talks and trying to negotiate with Israel, basically nothing has come about, at least for the Palestinian side. We have now, actually, the leader of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei. We also have the leader of Hezbollah in Lebanon, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, who's saying resistance is the only way to deal with Israel. Tell me your take on that. Is there a way to negotiate with Tel Aviv?
Well, as a solidarity activist, I'm reluctant to tell Palestinians what their strategies should be. I simply don't feel that is my place. But I think, objectively speaking, we can look at 20 years of the negotiating process and see that it is simply produced mounting losses for the Palestinians. The Palestinians went to the table starting sometime before the Oslo